You no doubt heard this summer about the opiate crisis. Last month, the CDC announced the rate of fatal heroin overdoses nearly quadrupled in the last decade. We did a shout out to Here and Now contributing stations and were overwhelmed with stories from Orange County, California.
I've seen that many people die that I've gone to high school with, grown up with, you know, played t-ball with.
To a detox program in upstate New York.
Look how many people are in this folder just waiting to be admitted. Each one of those is a patient trying to get a bed here.
And a county hospital in South Florida.
We have a real epidemic here. This is every day Jackson Memorial Hospital. In any other place, what happens here every day would be a public health emergency.
Voices from WLRN in Miami, before that, North Country Public Radio, and KQED's The California Report and California Watch. Well, today, we start a series of conversations, beginning with a mother from Massachusetts who's part of a movement to see addiction as a health issue, not a moral failure. When her younger son, James, died of a heroin overdose 2 years ago, her family didn't even mention the cause of death in his obituary. But when her oldest son, Patrick, died of an overdose just 2 weeks ago, she not only put his battle with heroin in the obituary, she called the local newspaper and invited them to the funeral. Ann Ahern Avitabli joins us now in the studio. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
And your one remaining son, Kevin, is with us as well. And I'm so sorry to put it that way, Ann. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you so much. Yes. It used to always be my three sons.
Yeah.
And I think about it every once in a while now. How will I say that? You know, my only child, my only son. It's devastating. I don't know if people realize, but I also lost my husband exactly 2 years ago.
Oh, no, we didn't.
From a brain tumor. So it's been quite painful.
Kevin, you weigh in on that too. These sound like great young men.
Yeah. I mean, they were, you know, growing up, they had two best friends, you know, for forever. You do things, you play sports together, you fight, you know, you have all the experiences, and now to know, like, a lot of those memories, nobody's there to, you know, kind of share those with me.
How did it start for your brothers?
My youngest brother, it started, we played football together, he broke his collarbone his freshman year of football. He was first prescribed to opiates at that age. You know, I've had the opportunity to play with people in the NFL, and he was by far the best athlete, you know, I've ever been around. He was unreal.
James,
he was just phenomenal. But within a year, he went from, you know, playing football with me to, you know, being on the edge of dropping out of high school and getting into trouble. And the thing with my brothers, I mean, they're big, strong, stubborn young men who thought they could do it themselves. You know, even my older brother.
This is Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick, even up until recently. I mean, he was sober for, it would have been a year last week, and he still thought, you know, towards the end, he got cocky, and he got too confident that he could do it himself.
He got a real job, a good job, and he was excited, and he had everything going for him. The disease began to slip in.
You know, when
I said to him very recently, I said, the second you think you can control it, it begins to control you. And little did I know that the disease had slipped in. And so here we are, a shock. And I know that he's kicking and screaming that it was a mistake. But there's no way to change it. It's been a long, long struggle because for 12 years... It's like saying you have heart disease, and if I told you you had heart disease, but I'm only going to treat you for 3 days. That's what the system is doing. That's what the insurance companies are doing. They give you 3 days treatment, they send you home. If I had terminal cancer, they would still work with me, and they would still help me, and they would still give me medication. And like my husband had the same type of cancer that Ted Kennedy had. And even though they knew it was terminal, they still gave him surgery. They still give him chemo with the hopes that maybe it would extend his life, with maybe it will help the next person. But unfortunately, because of the stigma of addiction and the shame, the disgrace in not believing that it's a disease, they won't help. And therefore, you end up with somebody who's battling this for 2, 5, 10 years.
By themselves.
You know, and they go in and out of jail. You know, when Pat and James both got involved in the criminal justice system, and we would go there or they would go there and say, like, I need help. But, you know, the police or the DAs, they would just look at it and say, this is the charges, this is what you need. So
you're saying your brothers were sort of begging the police, please help me.
Begging the police, begging the treatment centers. I mean, some people will say all the time, like, addiction isn't a disease because the person has to do it. You know, so when I get cancer, when I get cancer, I didn't choose to get cancer. I may have smoked all my life, but cancer is something that we can't do anything about. But they don't see the brain and what's going on inside of the brain when you're doing heroin. And when Pat decided that he actually wanted help, we brought him to a detox. And the detox tried to get rid of him in 4 days or 5 days. And he had to tell them that he was a threat to himself and to everybody else. So then they kept him for 3 or 4 more days. And, you know, so he kept having to beg them basically to say, I'm going to hurt somebody if you let me out of here. To even get into the detox, he was clean for a couple of days. He had to use heroin to go into detox to test positive. So, I mean, Pat, this is a story. I mean, a year and a half ago, I was on a boat in Hyannis, and I got a phone call from Pat's fiance that said that he had overdosed. So I said, all right, I'll be right there. I got off the boat. I started driving. I got another phone call that said he was already discharged, and they didn't know where he was. So within an hour, he had overdosed, got to the hospital, and then discharged.
And yeah. How gut-turning, Kevin, has it been to be worried about your brothers?
I mean, it's devastating for the whole family because, you know, I'm angry that my brothers are doing this and I'm angry at my brother. It was...
And scared.
Yeah, and scared. And I hate phone calls. If you call any one of us after 9 p.m., like, we think the world's on fire because every time I've gotten a phone call, it's been, you know, it just affects your whole way of being of... You know, I hang out with my friends sometimes and I don't talk about our life. I mean, up until this, really, like, I have people that I work with that don't know anything about my life.
Why did you change all that now? And you actually called the local newspaper, the Brockton Enterprise, when your second son, when Patrick died. A lot of people are sweeping this under the rug.
Well, I'm very involved with different GRASS meetings, which is called Grief Recovery After Substance Passing. So I've been walking two walks for quite a few years now. One son passed away, so I go to the grief group, and yet I'm trying to keep hope alive because I have another child who's still struggling with it. I have so many people come up to me all the time. They go, have you seen this in the newspaper? They're really talking about it. And people have this illusion because we're talking about it in the newspaper that things are being changed. And I know things are not changing behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I put it in the paper that he died after a struggle from his disease of addiction. And that was the first decision I made, was to put that public. And, you know, going back to the newspaper for 1 second, I felt like they write about it all the time, and I invited them to come in and feel it. And I said that to them, look, come in and feel it. This is a true story. When my husband was dying of glioblastoma multiforme, I went to the hospital. My husband had a side effect from his medication, and I went into the hospital. And so I went and I said, could I please see a doctor? And I got, yes, right away, Mrs. Avitopoli. 7 months later, I'm at the same hospital for my son who overdosed. And I said, can we please get a doctor to see my son? Go sit down. And I said, look, please get a crisis doctor in here to see my son. And they said, they threatened to throw me out. I'm the same woman, the same hospital, and I was treated two completely different ways. That's what we need to stop.
You seem to be strengthened by your advocacy, and I'm seeing that. Mm. But I can't imagine there aren't moments when it's just so profoundly, I mean, the emptiness.
Yeah. You know, with my father, I mean, we went from a family of 5 to a family of 2 in 24 months. You know, this Christmas will be just me and my mother. So I probably get the saddest when I think about what could have been for my family. You know, like the lost hope. And I hate the word potential now because it just means that you haven't lived up to it yet. And that's what I saw in my brothers a lot of the time. They were smart. They were good looking. They were athletic. And they just had lost potential. And we're trying to function as well as we can, but inside, you know, oftentimes it can be very...
very lonely path.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that I hate the most is when people ask me, how did you end up the way you did? And I'll say, I had two wonderful parents.
They assume that something must have happened.
Absolutely.
The way your brothers were raised,
right,
or something, and it could have happened to anyone.
Like, my genetic curses was I have flat feet, a big chin, and there across the bear was opiates.
Back in 1999, Purdue Pharmacy spent $200 million pushing opiates. So when my boys were growing up, little did I know when I took my son for his broken collarbone and the following year for his torn ligaments in his leg, and they gave me medication, and I thought I was being a good mom, and it, you know, it wasn't the Tylenol with codeine that I grew up with back in the, you know, 70s, and, you know, what was supposed to be a life-ending severe pain, we start giving for wisdom teeth. Why are we pushing these drugs? This is, you know...
I mean, just in my community, like my high school kids I went to high school with, I mean, it's the numbers easily in the double digits on kids I've lost, kids I've grown up with, played football. Yeah, to heroin.
Well, and you, a double loss, two brothers, the most recent 2 weeks ago. It must feel unreal.
Yep. You don't really, like, get a grasp of it until, like, a couple months when you realize, like, he's not coming back.
Right now, the pain is nearly unbearable, but I know in 2 months...
Yeah, it'll be worse.
It'll be 100 times worse. Because it's forever.
Anne Ahern Avatabli and her son Kevin, her two other sons, Patrick and James, both died of heroin overdoses. Tomorrow, a doctor who agrees that drug companies and overprescribing doctors should be more accountable.